Hi, this is Brad Smith from the Duke Blue Devils, and you're listening to DeFi and Dixie on Inside Lacrosse.
Headquarters of Inside Lacrosse, it's the DeFly and Dixie podcast, featuring Inside Lacrosse, Big Ten Network analyst, and my Hopkins homeboy, Mark Dixon. I am your host, Dan Flynn. Dix, let's get it. Dix, this weather, man, feels like spring.
Ain't it sweet?
Yeah.
Nice and warm out
there. It's been warm for like a week, and people don't know what to do with themselves.
This weather is fantastic. It's taken quite a bit of time to get to us, but now that it's here, very much enjoying it. Me too.
But
you got
felt
short
like
sleeves
spring.
On today.
Yeah, feels like spring with the Hopkins homecoming last week.
Yeah,
Blue Jays got a good win.
You took your son.
I did.
Was that fun?
We had a really fun time.
Mm-hmm.
So the whole family was supposed to go, and then my 5.5-year-old daughter heard what was going on with the day's activities, said no chance.
Just put the kibosh on that.
No chance. So there was mom took the daughter, and then dad's son bonding day, boys' day, as we call it. And we went to the game together.
Boys' club.
But it was homecoming, and I was going to meet up with a lot of my friends, and it's really hard with a 3-year-old boy.
I can imagine.
Who's somewhat potty trained.
Mm-hmm.
He's potty trained. It just it makes me super nervous, and I got to be on the edge the whole
time.
He's
potty trained when he wants to be.
Yeah.
Probably.
So it's sometimes easier to have both my kids together because they kind of entertain themselves and they can, you know, Hannah can yell if something happens to him, but I have to be really on my toes when it's just me and him. Handicap my game that day. But we had a really fun time. And after the game, we went to the Fiji Islander, your old fraternity.
You were telling me about it.
I was texting you during the game.
It is from what you reported amongst others, and the last time that I went, which has been a handful of years because I haven't had the homecoming game in a number of years, it is a shell of its former self.
It is not like it used to be.
It's disappointing.
They had it at the Decker Garden, which is next to the president's house.
So you know nothing's getting out of hand there.
No, they had some light snow fencing. There were about 100 people there. They did have a bounce house, which is what was the big attraction to get
bouncy castle.
Bennett Flynn there. He had a great time in there. And there were some other 3-year-old boys there to play with too. But there was no pig. There wasn't much island at all. There used to be.
Was there beer?
They had a beer truck. You could buy tickets. I hate this system. You can't just walk up and get a beer. You have to buy
a
ticket and then get the beer.
That's been the biggest complaint over the years is the system to get a beer. You could be waiting for as long as 10, 15 minutes in a line
to get a beer. Yeah, there's no real signage for it, so I did. I waited in line to get something to drink, and then they said, no, you need to have tickets. And I said, well, where do you get them? Right there. Okay, I'll be right back. And you're going to have to get in a line again.
I know. You got it. Yeah, it's a sign of the times. Risk management, that's the big buzzword when you and I were at Hopkins. Risk management, and it's 100-fold these days.
Been out of college for 25 years.
I
have a 3-year-old with me.
No, you've been out for 26 years.
It's true, but I'm low risk, though. I'm a low risk.
You're low risk? Yes. I can see that.
High reward, low risk.
But I don't know. Benghazi could be high risk. I could see him. Isn't that the nickname you have for your son? What do you think?
No, but I might have to start. I call him Benito or
I thought Benny. You told me when he was really, really young. Because
Blindside.
Blindside. I thought it was Benghazi.
Benghazi's great, though. I like that. I'm going to have to remember. No, he's just gigantic for a 3-year-old.
Most people
think he's 4 or 5.
Oh, wow.
He just turned 3 in December, and he's very tall.
So was he throwing his weight around in the bouncy house?
Oh, he was crushing kids.
Yeah, good.
Just crushing kids.
Good.
Especially one kid, you know, just trying to, I'm standing there, and they got the little netting on the thing, and this little 3-year-old comes bouncing over to me, and I'm like, hey, and he pushes on the screen, spilled my beer all over me, all over my shirt.
The beer that you had to get out of line to get a ticket, get back in line to get the beer, you finally get the beer, and ruins your Hawaiian shirt.
So I'm like, Bennett, see that kid there?
Get him. Yeah, I want to see him flying out of that entrance to the bouncy house. I actually did make it.
Benghazi took care of business.
Benghazi. Yeah, that's a great movie, by the way. The
13
movie
hours.
13 Hours or whatever.
Jim Halpert.
Fantastic
Jim Halpert from The Office,
yeah,
the star.
Yeah, when he took a turn as a badass.
Yeah.
But hey, I did make it down to my 25th reunion down at the Red Star on the corner of 33rd and St. Paul.
After doing all those games, and then you had a game the next day.
Did two games.
State College.
Yeah, I had to go. My good friend, and I got to give her a shout out, she might be our number one fan of the podcast, and her family might be the number one fan family, Jane Webster. So shout out to Jane and her kids, Mac, Bo, Charlotte. I know that they
great lacrosse family.
Great lacrosse family.
Yeah, they're definitely better fans than our families.
They've actually heard the show.
Yeah, my kids, wife's like, why do I want to listen to that?
Well, my kids,
Daddy, stop talking.
I'm like, hey, you want to listen to my podcast? They're like, they take their earbuds out. Like, what'd you say? But Jane was like my Sherpa. Because I was like playing the old guy card. I'm like, I'm coming from College Park. I'm probably not going to get there till 9.
You're big time.
She knows. I was like, I didn't register. I don't feel like paying $90 to get in.
What?
Yeah, it's like $90 to get in to these reunions. Hopkins makes sure they get their pound of flesh.
To go to the Red Star was $90.
Did
you get dinner served?
I can't. Yes, there was food.
Was there entertainment?
I can't speak to how much this 25th reunion costs. 20th reunion on campus. I think it was in Mud Hall. Remember Mud Hall?
Yeah.
It was like
CLT Mud Hall. Biology.
Yeah, it was like planetary sciences and stuff like that. Or
the main biology.
That's where I took dinosaurs.
I took dinosaurs.
Remember dinosaurs?
Class was really hard.
You tell me about it. It was like three quarters of the class.
Took a pass fail and I was worried I was going to be.
You're like, hey, I thought a P has a little curve in front of it. What's this?
It was like a Latin class. It was like a geology class.
It's crazy.
It was very hard.
But it was in Mud Hall, and I remember my roommate.
They have a big auditorium.
My roommate from college, Steve McCardle, and I walked up. We didn't register or anything. And at the door, they're like, yeah, it'll be $80. $80 for, and it wasn't even a lecture. It was like the foyer of the lecture hall. And they were serving beer and wine. So we're like, huh? So,
is any of this tax deductible? Is this a donation?
Well, I always like sticking it to the man, so I think I probably went in a back door or something like that.
I'm sure
grabbed
you did.
The beer and left or something. But anyway, I don't know how much the Red Star cost. There was food. I didn't get there till around 9 o'clock. I think this thing kicked off at like 7, so probably a lot of people who were already there were already gone. But it was great to see Jane. Thank you, Jane, for getting me to
Jane's the best.
Rallying me to come and then also being a loyal listener, because that's what I was telling her the next day. We were texting, and she was like, you know, good to see you, glad you could make it out. And I was like, there were people that I never spoke to that were coming up to me and being like, hey, man, you know, my kids love you on lacrosse games, or I really am proud of you for, and I guess that's like the maturity of being 25 years out. Like, I saw the person and was like, oh, I never didn't talk to him when I was in school, and why should I talk to him now? And people were like, and so it was really, really cool. Then you had the opposite, people who you thought were like good guys back in school,
yeah,
and they're not anymore. So it was like a really interesting dynamic.
Well, some people change, some people stay the same.
True.
But I find more people stay the same, and
I would agree with that.
It's nice reconnecting with people, because you don't even really, you get over the, so what are you doing now, where do you live, you have any kids,
right?
Yep. All right, and then you're just talking about
other
stuff again.
See you in another 5 years.
But it feels good just to be in the company of
I ran into do you remember Atul
yeah,
Pathiel, who was
yeah,
our student trainer.
I talked to him a little bit.
Did you? He was there. He was representing. So it was good to see Atul.
Yeah.
Yeah. So anyway, 1994 25th reunion for Johns Hopkins University in the books.
There you go.
Let's
hope we make another 25.
I was able to make it out for a couple of hours.
Hey, let's talk about some midweek action, Dix. There were two big games
yeah.
on Tuesday night. Number 9, Syracuse handled number 8 Cornell in a big upstate game, 13-8. Maybe Syracuse's most complete game of the season against a top 10 team. The Orange scorers, defenders, and specialists all were clicking.
Yeah, Cornell, everything that has been bugaboos of theirs this year were on full display in this game. Only 1 in 25 faceoffs. I thought Chase Ireland was really, really good.
Yeah,
in goal, 17
saves. Yeah.
But Teat and Peterson. 2 assists apiece. That's it.
When's the last time both those guys have been held scoreless?
Not sure.
I don't know if it's ever happened. You know, it's obviously...
The last time was last night.
I mean, Teat's a junior. I don't think those two have ever been held scoreless.
Well, goalless.
Both of them goalless in a
yeah,
second.
Yeah, I'm not sure. But it just... I turned that game on a little late, and it was right before halftime. And I think I keep going back to this Colgate-Syracuse game where I was blown away by watching that game from start to finish, and at no point did I think Syracuse could win that game. Watching this game, I'm like, there's no way Cornell's coming back. There was nothing in that game that would suggest that the Big Red had a rally in them, which is kind of unusual when you consider some of the nice middies that they have. You know, you have Teeth, the playmaker. Erland was making some saves, but you got to tip your cap to Syracuse. They've the Tuesday Titans, the Syracuse Orange, blasted Hobart in Geneva last week, and then they score a big win in the Dome this week.
Yeah, they got 3 goals from Stephen Rafis and Bradley Voigt, 2 goals from Brendan Curry, Nate Solomon, and Nick Mellon was outstanding in his defense of Teat,
yeah.
I got a question for you, man. How good is Cornell? Their biggest wins are over Towson and Lehigh.
Right. They're 1-2 right now. No, 2-2 in the Ivy. They basically, so I'll be writing about them, and we'll talk about them later.
I kind of feel like they need to win the Ivy League championship to get into the big dance later.
You're probably right. And quite frankly, the game against Notre Dame this weekend is a big game for them. Maybe a bigger game for the Irish, mathematically. But they're basically playing an elimination game. Not this week, but next week against Brown. And then they have Princeton. They're the Brown
and Princeton. That won't be easy either.
No, but well, Princeton's 0-3 in the Ivy, believe it or not. But Brown, so your Ivy goes Penn, Yale,
Brown,
Cornell.
No. Harvard.
Harvard. Is Cornell sitting in the fourth spot right now?
I think they're tied with Harvard. Or Harvard is ahead of them.
Maybe you're right.
They're 2-2.
Cornell beat Harvard, though.
Harvard's 2-2. Cornell's 2-2.
I just feel like there's an elimination game. Like if they lose to Brown, they could be out.
They could be out of the Ivy League tournament.
Yeah, okay. And Princeton, if they lose to Princeton as well. So I feel like they have an elimination game coming up against Brown.
Yeah, it was a tough game for Cornell, and they do have a chance to rebound and get a pretty good, solid win this weekend. And we'll talk about that in a little bit. And the other game was number 2, Loyola hung on to beat Georgetown 16-14. Another game that was on TV. It was 11-6 at halftime, and then G-Town scored 3 goals to start the third quarter and get right back into it. I was really impressed with Dan Bucaro.
Oh, he's good. No, he's good.
Fast.
Yeah, when you consider the fact that he missed last year with a knee injury, the way he plays is even more impressive. And Jake Caraway had 5 goals, I believe, in that game.
Most of it late.
I mean, but he was a threat all game long.
And Masi Bucci.
Bucci, yeah. He's a good player.
But, had a nice game
too. But, you know, Loyola, this is a game where Spencer was held to 5 points. Fast starts for the Greyhounds. Loyola, Lehigh last week, we're talking about, yeah, we think Lehigh definitely has a chance to win this game with Connor Gaffney at the faceoff dot, Craig Chick down on defense. And I turned that game on last Saturday before I headed down to College Park to Michigan, Maryland. It was 5-0 the first 5 minutes.
It was 9-0.
It was a blitzkrieg. I only saw it 5.
And they lost another defenseman, too.
Lehigh did.
Yeah, a freshman defenseman. Pat Spencer ran him over, and he got hurt.
Oh, jeez. But Kevin Lindley is developing into – no, I shouldn't say developing into. 47
goals.
Yeah, has developed into a lethal scorer.
4 assists.
Great game for Aiden Olmstead. I think he had 8 points.
Breakout game right? for him.
And he's been battling injuries all year. So defensively are the concerns for the Greyhounds. I think they just leave it up to Jacob Stover to bail them out a little too often. And then Bailey Savio with the faceoff. You know, they don't have any other faceoff guy. So what's he going to look like in a couple weeks when the weather is warmer than it is now?
That's true.
And they need the ball. But, man, when they get the ball, they are – and Chase Scanlon, guys, he's pretty good.
Yeah, I think he made our midseason
first team All-American, midseason All-American team, yeah.
Which is pretty impressive.
Yeah, sure.
For sure.
But great wins for Loyola and Syracuse. Kind of, I feel like the Syracuse win was a little bit more of a statement in that Cornell beat them twice last year, including in the Dome in the first round of the NCAAs, held Teat without a goal, held Peterson without a goal. The Loyola game, I think it's just a reminder that they're not going anywhere, that they're still a really, really good team. People have been begrudgingly putting them, like moving them up in the polls the last couple weeks just because everyone else around them is losing. So it's not necessarily how Loyola is playing. It's more of a product of collateral damage, if you will. But I do think this Loyola team is dangerous. And I'm, you know, I know we talked about the games we're going to cover this week. And I'm looking at the Patriot as potentially, in all likelihood, unless Loyola loses that tournament, a one-bid league.
Yeah, that's what it's looking like now. Yeah. It's just like they've taken each other out. you know, from 2 to 7 in that league.
Right, right. Maybe BU. Loyola plays BU this week. So
have a chance.
Chris Gray.
All right, there's one other result that I want to talk about. This is from a Division II game, Division II and Division III. So Johnson Wales University, which is culinary school, they have a satellite campus in Denver. They have a lacrosse team.
Mm-hmm. Culinary school, that's right up your alley.
I believe it's their third year of their program, Division III program. They went over the mountains, played Colorado Mesa, mm-hmm. Division II program, who's now 5-6. So not, you know, we're not talking a contender for the D2 championship this year. And Colorado Mesa beat them 52-0 in a college men's lacrosse game. 52-0.
What's Johnson Wales record?
1-9. They have a W.
They beat somebody.
They have a W.
Okay.
They won earlier in the season.
52-0?
Yeah, they played 13 guys. The game ended when a player got hurt, but not even a Johnson Wales player. It ended with like 7 minutes left when a Colorado Mesa player went down, and they just said stop. Which I don't understand. Like, okay, you did, when it was 52-0 and 7 minutes left, you decided to stop.
Play?
You couldn't stop it at 30-0. Wow. I've never heard of that. Have you ever heard of a score that out? Lopsided.
No.
That's like beating someone 250-0 in football.
Well, I think that did happen. Wasn't that Georgia Tech back in the early 1900s, maybe even the 1800s, played like Cumberland College or something and won? I want to say it was like 222-0, but nothing in modern era. I mean, when you talk about a blowout in college football, if Alabama's playing the Jabroni, you know, used to be Division I AA. What is it now?
It's still one of them.
FBS.
That football championship subdivision.
FCS. They're winning that game 73-0. They're not winning 200 and something to nothing. No. So 52-0 in a lacrosse game?
Yeah. The Johnson Wales guys didn't get a shot off. Not a shot on goal. They did not take a shot in the game.
It's not very sportsmanlike.
No, I really have a lot of questions about this game. I just can't fathom it. So I went and looked at Johnson and Wales. They... giving up 28 plus goals is common for them. Ooh. They've done it in probably 7 of their 9 losses.
Okay.
Games
on the schedule.
Everybody go check it out. Yeah, go look up that box score, and it's a head scratcher for sure.
52-0. Yeah, that's a lot of goals. Wow. And you figure it's a 60-minute game.
But they didn't even play 60
minutes. They
didn't
play 7 minutes. 53 minutes.
Yeah. They scored a goal a minute.
A goal a minute. Wow. That's crazy.
They got killed. They only won 3 faceoffs.
Now, what about that?
And they had 27 turnovers.
Now, what about that current mentality that if you're beating somebody and then you, like, your opponent can tell that you're lessening up or lightening up, that's supposed to be insulting. So that's why you continue to push and press and all that kind of thing. So do you think that applied in this game maybe?
I don't know. I really need to find out.
And if it ended with a Colorado,
I can't get past this game.
If it ended with a Colorado Mesa player being hurt too, a Johnson Wales player had enough and took a run probably.
I saw some takes like that on Twitter that it's Chris Rosenthal, Rosie said, if when it's 20-0, you know, I might do a cheap shot. When it's 30-0, I'm coming for your head. 52-0, there's no way you're getting home.
As a
college official, what would you do in that game? How do you manage that?
I have never been involved in a game that lopsided ever. I mean, I've been in my share of, not to pick on junior college, but there's a tremendous disparity in talent oftentimes at the JUCO level. And I've had games end up 23-5, 24-6.
But I've heard of those.
But you have to, I mean, that's when you be basically, and that's not just JUCO. I mean, I've had Division III games of that nature. You basically become a babysitter. You know, get out of there. You know, stop, put that down. You have to really monitor because at that point, yeah, some kids are still playing hard to try to make plays, but other kids are really frustrated. And really looking at it to go out there and you know they're tired. They're tired of getting beat up on, so they're gonna try to beat up on somebody else. It's hard. It's difficult.
All right, Dix, big weekend coming up again. Let's get to these featured games first. Number 4, Virginia, 9-2 now, 3-0 in the ACC. They've clinched first place regular season finish in the ACC, something that was unheard of during their 18-game losing streak back a couple years ago. They will travel to Duke to exercise some more Blue Devils Saturday at noon.
Can't believe you're still talking about Duke with a smile on your face. I thought you'd be in a fetal position after your boy Zion went down to Michigan State in the men's Division I basketball tournament.
That was so a week ago, Dix.
I know, but you weren't upset about it?
Of course I was upset. I was sad because I really enjoyed watching them play so much. Right. It was so much fun.
You're right. I should have made fun of you last week because the Final Four and the championship just took place. I didn't watch a minute of the championship, by the way.
It was a great game.
It was 20 after 9 or 9:30 with first tip.
I don't understand that.
It's crazy. But anyway, Virginia, what, 8 wins in a row now? Longest winning streak in the nation. Haven't lost since February. So it's nice. They're playing good lacrosse. Top-heavy scoring, but when you have 5 guys like that, you know, maybe you can get away with it. Duke, but the Cavaliers have not. I think they've beaten Duke. I have it written down because I'm writing the piece. Once in the last, I think they're like 1 out of 17, 1 out of 18, something like that. In the last,
wow, that's crazy.
Yeah, almost 2 dozen meetings between these two schools. I think 2010 was the last time Virginia beat Duke in lacrosse. So maybe with this newfound success in the Atlantic Coast Conference, Virginia can reverse their fortunes against the Blue Devils if they're going to do it. So Virginia presents a lot of challenges to your defense, but JT Dallas Harris, Cade Van Rapport, they're the personnel that can, you know, be versatile and moved around. Who's going to guard this new retooled Duke midfield now that Brad Smith is back up top with Nakai Montgomery? Each of them had 5 points against Notre Dame last week. Really, really good performances. That was sort of the ailment of this Duke Blue Devil team was offensively they become anemic in their 2-game losing streak. So it's going to be a really good game down in Durham on Saturday.
We had a chance to speak to Brad Smith, and this is the conversation with Brad. We're joined by Duke senior Brad Smith. Brad, thanks for joining us on the D-Fly and Dixie podcast.
Thank you for having me.
Brad, your season started off not the way anybody would want. You were in and out of the lineup with an injury. How is that injury, and how are you feeling now?
It was tough happening right at the beginning of the season, and it was not the start I wanted to my senior campaign. But at this point in the season, I'm all healed up. I'm 100%, and I'm just glad to be back out there practicing and playing games.
Last season, you were a first team All-America midfielder. It's been this position you played since your freshman year, all through your time at Duke. Senior year, you get moved to attack. I've always been impressed with your ability to distribute the ball and facilitate no matter where you're on the field. But last game, you're back at midfield. Talk about that move back for the Notre Dame game and your comfort level playing attack or midfield and moving back and forth.
Right. So I was an attackman in high school, but the game's obviously a lot different. So when I got here at Duke, everything I learned was midfield, and I never really had considered doing anything down low and playing attack. So senior year, when I got moved to attack, I just like playing the game, man. So like the coaches were telling me they might move me down to attack, and I was just say, put me where you want, and I'll play. It doesn't matter to me. But getting moved back last game for the Notre Dame game was awesome. There was a level of comfort that wasn't thinking about movements on offense, and it was just kind of playing. And I think it opened up space for some other guys like C.J. Carpenter and Sean Lowry that didn't really have the opportunity with me down in attack. So I think it really helped the flow of the offense in general, and it opened stuff up for some guys that didn't have opportunities before.
Yeah, no doubt. It really opened up your offense. Should we expect to see you remain on the first midfield unit from here on out?
I think that's a safe bet.
Good answer. Hey, after the loss to Carolina, Coach Danowski was pretty vocal about the need for some leaders to step up. And you guys turned around the next week with a really important 14-8 win over Notre Dame. Maybe Duke's most impressive win of the season. Do you feel like that was your best game? And then
as a captain and a senior, did you guys take did you take that like a personal challenge to you and your other senior teammates?
Definitely. I haven't. Our senior class hasn't lost two games in a row in a long time, so that was kind of a gut check for our group, because you never really want to be the senior class that leads the team to a mediocre season, you know. Mm-hmm. So that was a gut check, and we were challenged all week in practice by the coaches. They were saying the leaders need to be more vocal, they need to be bigger presence on the field, and I took that to heart, because being one of the few seniors on the offensive side of the ball, and obviously the offense wasn't performing the way we see in practice or the way that we know we can. So yeah, it was definitely personal, and it was a challenge, but seeing the offense and the flow last weekend was a lot better, and I think it had to do with not necessarily the leadership, but the way that everyone was on the same page. It was more six guys working together as opposed to six individuals playing within the same offense. So I think the flow was better, and everyone was in the same offense, on the same page, and I think that's what the key to the performance really was.
You touched on how good Duke has been while you've been there, and even before, not losing consecutive games for a long time. Last year, you guys make it to the NCAA Finals. How is this year's team and the makeup of the players and the locker room the same or different than years in the past that you've played on?
It's the same in a lot of ways, because every team goes through the same stuff. You kind of hit a rough patch somewhere in the middle of the season. Like, typically for a lot of Duke teams, it's earlier, but for us, it happened to be the past two weekends before Notre Dame. So every team has that sort of rough patch, and you kind of got to figure, like, you ask yourself, how bad do you really want to get back to championship weekend? So in that way, it was like every other Duke team I've been on, but I think the main difference is last year, obviously, what Justin Gutterding was able to do and the attention he drew was unbelievable. So not having that sort of attack presence, that goal scorer presence, it makes us, and as I was saying earlier, it makes us play as a more cohesive unit on offense. So I think in that sense, we're a little different, where it's now got to be six guys and we're beating people with ball speed, as opposed to maybe Justin drawing two and then finding the open man right away. So I think in that sense, we're different.
On the defensive side, your team boasts two of the very best cover guys in the nation in JT Giles Harris and Cade Van Rapphorst. What's it like to go against those guys in practice on a regular basis, and what do fans need to know about them?
It's challenging, definitely. And when I was playing attack the whole year, we would be doing like one-on-ones in practice, and you go against Cade the first rep of the drill, and then you're like, oh, thank God, like maybe I'll get a break, I'll go against somebody else, and then you look and then JT's right there.
Yeah,
so that's definitely not easy to do, but
they thought the same thing about you, like, I got Brad.
those guys are grinders, they're hard workers, they're both strong, they got great feet. They're hard to beat. And then when you put that in the whole defense with Turner and Nett and Jack Fowler, that's a scary group. When they're all on the same page, it's tough to really get anything by them. So, yeah.
So two of your assistant coaches are former Duke student athletes and world-class future Hall of Fame players, guys who've won the Tewarton, Ned Crotty and Matt Donowski. What's it mean to have two former Duke guys who have been through that experience, but also such great players out there on the field with you, mentoring you every day?
Oh, that's awesome. I wouldn't want to learn from anybody else. The experiences that, I'll say the coaching staff has, because they've brought three teams to be national champions. So obviously they have the experiences, but then with Matt and Ned having the on-field experience, they get the first hand, like, hey, I know you're seeing this, but why don't you check out like maybe this through ball or like stuff like that. Like they've played in every position on the field. They've done stuff. I mean, they've been playing the game for so long. So the experience that they bring is like honestly mind boggling, because I'll think I know something about the sport and then they'll hit me with something completely different that I like never even considered. So having those guys as mentors, not only lacrosse, but also in like the leadership aspect, it's really cool. Like I've learned stuff from them that, that I'll carry with for the rest of my life, not even just in lacrosse. And then they also bring a pretty cool, like social aspect off the field. Matt and Ed do, because I mean, they're such good friends together. And then they also went to school here. So they know what it's like to be a student athlete and a Duke lacrosse player.
This week you play Virginia, which in your first 2 years at Duke didn't win an ACC game. The Cavaliers are on a little bit of they're 3-0 and on a revenge tour. I'm sure they'll be ready for you. You guys have won 10 straight against them. What do you guys need to do to win this game? What have you seen from them?
So this game's always a blast. Practice is fun because it's so high paced. Virginia is a very athletic team. They're highly skilled, so they can beat you on the ride. They can beat you in the middle of the field. Coach has been saying keys to the game are our fundamentals and our discipline. Mm-hmm. So we got to make sure we're handling their ride and we're clearing the ball well and we're riding smart so they can't get a lot of transition. And I mean, this is one of my favorite games of the season because it's like a track meet, basically. You're running, both teams are going up and down, the ball's flying all over the place, and it gets sloppy at some points, but I think we need to have the discipline to be able to control the pace and not really be swayed when Virginia goes on a run, because it's almost inevitable. That has happened every Duke-Virginia game that I've been a part of, and it happens in almost every Virginia game in general.
All right, are you ready for a couple of rapid-fire questions?
Yeah.
All right. What's the best ACC road trip and why?
I like Syracuse. I've been up to the Dome as a kid. My dad went to high school around there, so that's a fun trip for me.
All right. What's on your pregame playlist?
A lot of stuff. I like the Red Hot Chili Peppers.
Okay, good choice. It's old school like me. I can identify with that. All right. Scale of 1 to 10. How excited are you for the Game of Thrones season premiere? Are you a fan of the show?
8.
Okay.
I am a fan. I'm going to be honest, I skipped 2 of the middle seasons, but I've been watching the past few.
Well, then you're good. The middle ones, season 4 and 5, you didn't miss a whole lot.
Yeah.
But you're good. All right. I can't wait either. All right. Last question. If Zion played lacrosse, what's his ideal position?
Oh, geez. I think he could play anywhere. He would be a scary defender, definitely. And then I don't think many people would be able to cover him if he was a midfielder.
Well, Brad, I really appreciate your time. Thank you for joining us, and good luck this Saturday against Virginia. Really appreciate it.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, thanks.
Take care.
Our next featured game is number 19, UMass, 7-4. Their 6-game winning streak was snapped last week in an overtime loss to Hofstra. Travels down to Towson, take on the number 11 Tigers, who are 7-3 and 2-0 in the CAA. In a lot of ways, I think these are the two best teams in the CAA meeting.
Delaware's still 2-0. Delaware's 2-0.
The Blue Hens are having a really nice season, but I really like the way these teams are playing. Two nationally ranked teams this week. They'll play Saturday at noon.
Yeah, and when you look at this game, Towson had dominated the series up until last year when the Minutemen won both games, the regular season contest, and then they won the championship game in the Colonial Athletic Association. Let's not forget that UMass a year ago, according to Andy Shea at Yale, said the Minutemen gave them the hardest game in the Division I tournament. Not that that really has any bearing on this game, but I think that just speaks to how tough the Minutemen play. Isaac Paparo is an excellent long pole. They can put him at rope. They can put him down close. He scored 2 goals against Hofstra last weekend. Sean Scannone, tremendous goaltender. Then you look at Towson. It was an open competition last week between Brennan and Tyler Canto. And Canto got the start against Fairfield and made 15 saves. So he came out and only allowed 7 goals. So I think he's tightened his grip, or at least it would seem that he's tightened his grip on that starting goalie position. And Brendan Sunday, all of a sudden, is, I think he's got over 40 points this year for the Tigers. He's their leading scorer, and he's doing a really, really nice job. And then whenever you talk Towson, you got to talk Big Cat, Alex Woodall. Tom Myers is the faceoff man for UMass. He's facing off around 65%. Big Cat's around 75%. Do they bump Kobe Smith up to the wing? Or, I mean, you got Zach Goodrich on that faceoff unit. Paparo could come up, take a wing. That's going to be down and dirty. That's going to be a great battle between Myers and Woodall. And when you throw the wings in there, that's even more compelling.
Well, we had a chance to sit down and talk to Greg Cannella this week, head coach of the UMass Minutemen. Dix asked him that exact question about the faceoff battle. Here's our conversation with Coach Cannella. This week we're joined on the D-Fly and Dixie podcast with Greg Cannella, the head coach of the UMass Minutemen. Coach Cannella, thanks for joining us.
Well, thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Coach, your Minutemen sit at 7-4 and are ranked number 19 in the nation in the IL media poll. Before last week's overtime loss at Hosser, you had rattled off 6 consecutive wins. Talk to me a little about your team this year and some of the success that you've had so far.
I think we have a good group. You know, we have some real good seniors in Isaac Paparo and Sean Scannone, Ben Spencer, Greg Pandice, Mikey Elcock, who are really contributing a ton to the success of the team right now. Some good younger players, obviously Chris Connolly on attack, Jeff Traynor in the midfield, Gabe Prosek on attack. But, you know, I think it's just a mix of some older guys with experience, some younger guys with some experience as well. And, we got off to a little bit of a rocky start, lost a couple games in overtime. So that makes it 3 overtime losses on the year. And we rebounded pretty well with Albany and Harvard and a few other games coming through. Drexel in our first CAA game. And as you guys know, lost last week again in overtime to Hofstra on the road.
Last year, you guys won the CAA title, and you have a lot of those contributors back on this year's team. You talked about some of those senior leaders. What similarities do you see in this year's team, if you talk about like this year and last year combined, sort of, and some of your recent conference champion teams from 2012 or the 2005, 2006 era?
Yeah, I mean, I think the similarities with any team that we've had that's gone to the NCAA tournament, whether we won a conference title or not, was that our seniors played the best lacrosse that they played in their careers. And, I think right now, obviously, Isaac and Sean are doing a nice job and playing at a very high level. Ben Spencer has been in and out of the lineup in terms of being injured, but he's having a really nice year. Mikey Elcock, Panda, those guys, they have to play well for us, but they also have to lead and also recruit younger guys, juniors and sophomores to help them lead, and I think they've done a good job with that.
Yeah, I meant to ask you about that. So last week we came out with our midseason All-Americans, basically guys who have had a great first half of the season, and Isaac and Sean Scannone were named to our first team. Those guys have been fantastic. Talk about those guys and their leadership style and what that means to your program.
Yeah, well, I mean, since day one, Isaac's been I'm going to work harder than you kind of guy. And so he leads by example, but he's also a very powerful influence on everyone on the team in terms of the culture. And, we'll certainly miss him next year in a big, big way. So Isaac's been exceptional as a captain, as a leader. It's his second year as a captain. We've only had a few in my 25 years as the head coach that have been two-year captains. And now Sean, his senior year, he's finally solidified himself as the starter, the permanent starter, a guy that the team can count on, the defense can count on. They can play a little bit more relaxed, in front of him. And so right now I think his leadership is more of on the field and not only leading the defense, but leading the entire group in terms of our defensive midfield group. The short stick middies that do play two ways for us, and even guys like Isaac. So, you know, if guys want to lead on the field, they have to back it up with their play. And right now those guys, both those guys have done a nice job with that.
On the other end of the field, you're getting great production from your attack, led by sophomore Chris Connolly, as you mentioned. But you're also getting great production from midfielders Kevin Tobin and Jeff Traynor. How have those two units grown over the course of the season?
Yeah, I mean, so it's a little bit different for Chris. We graduated Buddy Carr, who was our leading scorer on attack last year. So Chris kind of takes the role of a guy that's going to handle the ball a little bit more, distribute a little bit more than he did last year. And then in the midfield, you know, Jeff Traynor is Jeff Traynor. Now he's a real marked man, obviously returning All-American and one of the top midfielders in our conference. So he's going to grab the pole. He's going to grab a lot of attention, a lot of double teams, a lot of early slides, get the ball out of his hands. So a guy like Kevin Tobin, who's a, you know, is a hard-nosed kid. He's an ex-hockey player. Is not afraid to, you know, stick his nose in there to get a tough ground ball or to take a tough shot. Or to push the ball for us. He's benefited from playing with Jeff. You know, a lot of attention's going to Jeff, and Kevin's kind of stepped through and helped us create opportunities for our offense.
A little bit more of a general question. UMass Lacrosse is synonymous with the Garber Gorilla moniker that decades ago was established under your former legendary coach, Dick Garber. And that nickname really has developed into a style, a signature style and an attitude. How do you describe Gorilla Lacrosse mentality and style of play?
Yeah, I would probably describe it a lot differently than if you asked one of our guys. You know, for me personally, it's about tradition. It's about tradition of the program. It's about honoring that tradition. But it is. It's also about hard work. It's about being unselfish, being willing to put aside personal accolades for the betterment of the team. Right. To play as a unit and really, you know, yeah, we want to play fast. We want to play tough, all that. Every team in the country wants to do that. But again, I think it's more about the tradition, the people that have come through here, the personalities that have come through here, but also how we want to represent ourselves. And not only, I mean, it's not just like this. Everybody thinks it's just guerrilla mentality. We're going to go out there and try to beat people up. There's a lot of discipline that goes into that, a lot of self-control that goes into that, but also there's an excitement to be together, you know, as a unit, whether we're playing on the road and certainly on Garber Field at home.
Let's turn our attention to your opponent this week, the Towson Tigers. The UMass-Towson rivalry has often defined the CAA over the last seven seasons, and that trend seems to continue this year. The Tigers had won seven in a row dating back to 2013 until you beat them twice last year and captured the CAA title. How would you describe this rivalry UMass has with Towson?
Yeah, I was going to say right now it's one-sided. Towson's had the best of us over the course of time since we've come into the CAA till last year.
Right.
And certainly this is a different year. So if you talk about rivalries, rivalries are usually even, right? You know, over time, this one's not. So, and I think right now Towson is the standard for the CAA. You know, the gold standard for the CAA. I think they have had a lot of success with the formula that works for them, and I think a lot of teams, including us, are trying to emulate that formula to be successful.
Coach, when you drill down in this matchup, when you look at Towson, a lot of their success starts at the faceoff dot with Alex Woodall. He's winning around 75-76% of his draws, but you counter with a guy, a senior in Tom Myers, who's at about 65%. Scatter report on the faceoff for this weekend.
Well, as you mentioned, you know, it's a scary thought when you see a team win, you know, three quarters of the faceoffs. For us as a unit, in terms of we're only going to win a quarter of these things. Holy cow, how the heck are we going to win this game, right? But I think Tommy has been really focused. He's waited his time this year. He's done a nice job, as you mentioned, at about 65%. So something's going to have to give, right, you know, in this game. And three for Towson really has controlled the ball to himself a ton. He's been very successful in transition as well. So it's a big challenge for Tom. It's a big challenge for our entire face-off unit.
What are some other keys for the Minutemen to get a victory this week?
Well, you know, on the road, you always have to match intensity, you know, get off the bus, match intensity, be really good early in the game. And then you have to sustain that, you know, and be really composed in your clear game. You know, again, as Mark mentioned, if they're going to win 75% of the faceoffs, we have to make saves. We have to clear the ball efficiently, right, close to 100%. So we have actual possessions, you know, without facing the ball off. And you have to obviously making stops, and that saves and defensive stops. Clearing the ball. And then again, you know, when you look at it, a lot of teams, they're not getting the amount of possessions that they're getting against Towson. You know, they're getting them in other games, but against Towson, you're limited. So on the offensive end, you have to be really efficient, shoot the ball really well, and really limit your unforced turnovers throughout the game.
All right, Coach, last question for you. You have a really impressive coaching tree of former players and assistants who you've tutored and guided on to coach at the high school and college levels. You know, some of those guys, notably head coaches, Chris Gabrielli, Jason Miller, and Andy Shea, dozens of guys. Is there a responsibility that you feel to mentor young coaches, and how meaningful are those relationships to you?
Those relationships are everything to me, you know, and I think it says more about those guys than it does myself. I mean, I guess I take some credit because I hired those guys, right? And I got lucky hiring those guys because they were great people coming in. I had relationships with some of them, not all of them. But again, it says a lot about them. I'm a little bit hands off at times with those guys and let them be creative in what they do and how they formulate, whether it's being a defensive coach or an offensive coach, their own ideas that they can bring to me and we can talk about. I've always been open to that. I've always encouraged those guys to think a little bit differently. But again, those relationships are, for me, they're the best thing about this. You know, you spend so much time with those guys in the office, watching film, on the road, recruiting, all the things that you do on a daily basis is with these people. And again, I'm very fortunate to have had great guys, great people, not only coaches, but great people to spend time with. And you know, I kind of just, I'm so happy that those guys are out there and have been successful. I do think it is important for coaches like myself to mentor young coaches. I don't think there's enough of that going on in a positive sense. You know, especially when you look at what's happening in recruiting, what's happening in everything else that we do in terms of coaching. You know, I've always encouraged those guys, listen, let's do things the right way, right? Let's not cheat anything. Let's not try to break any rules. Let's not, you know, the formula for success for those guys has been hard work and perseverance. And you know, that is my, I'm in a position to encourage them to understand that and to realize that if you're going to do this and be part of this profession and you want to sustain it for a long time, it's the only way to go.
Well, Coach Cannella, thanks for joining us. Best of luck this Saturday against the Tigers and throughout the rest of the regular season.
Thank you, guys. Pleasure to be with you.
Nice job on the interview.
Oh, thanks.
Even when I'm here, which I don't make many of the interviews.
Your schedule doesn't usually permit it when those guys are available.
Right, but yeah. You've gotten really good at it.
Thanks.
I don't even when I'm here, I don't need to interject. I don't need to slip on in. You know, I just thought it was, I know you didn't have a face-off question, because when I showed you my question, you were gave me the thumbs up, but look at you.
Yeah, thank you.
Look at you. I think I called you the Larry King of lacrosse, and then I figured I needed to update that a little bit, so I think we settled on Seth Myers.
Yeah, I'll take Seth Myers. That'll work.
Amherst, you're on.
Right with Greg Cannella.
He didn't even, like callers, he wouldn't even identify. He would just be like, Amherst, go. Sheboygan, you're on. He's something else, Larry King.
All right, Dix, it's time for our marquee game of the week, and it involves our Hopkins Blue Jays. Number 12, Ohio State, 7-2, but 0-2 in the Big Ten. Travels to Homewood Field to take on the number 16 Blue Jays, 6-4 now, and winners of two straight in the Big Ten, Sunday at noon on ESPNU.
So I had the chance to see Ohio State in person as they played Penn State this past weekend. We had that game on BTN. Great crowd at Penn State. Got to tip my cap to the Panzermonium, the student section at the new Panzer Stadium in State College. I like Ohio State. I like their face-off man. I like their wings. Trey LeClaire is a handful to guard. They just don't shoot well. And they dominated possession time, especially in the first quarter against Penn State. The Nittany Lions had a grand total of about 3 minutes and 40 seconds of possession. And Ohio State just, they just are struggling shooting the ball right now. And I think they're settling for some shots that aren't the best. They also don't have a ton of Dodgers that can get to the rack the way that some other teams do. But I like this Ohio State team. But to your point, their biggest win of the season is Notre Dame. And we just talked about the Irish. If they go south, that quality win will go south as well. So then you're looking at the Big Ten. Ohio State 0-2. They've got Hopkins, Maryland, Michigan remaining on the schedule. If you lose to Hopkins, you're behind the eight ball. So this is a huge game for Ohio State. They typically struggle in Baltimore. Blue Jays typically struggle in Columbus. This game is in Baltimore. Hopkins, big win over Rutgers. I mean, to get to two, and then conventional wisdom says you win three Big Ten games, you're in the tournament. So now they have three opportunities to get two. Ohio State, Penn State, Maryland. So
it doesn't get any easier.
Does not get any easier for them. For Hopkins.
Nothing is, you got to earn it in the Big Ten. So that's why I think this is such a pivotal game. As a Blue Jay fan, you're looking at the schedule and saying, oh, well, we're 2-0, we're in pretty good shape. But there's no guarantees, and there's, you know, if you can't beat Ohio State, you're going to struggle against Penn State and Maryland the way those teams are playing.
On paper.
But I'm saying the loser of this game could be on the outside looking in when it comes to the postseason, I think, including the Big Ten tournament.
I think Penn State and Maryland have established themselves as the clear 1-2 in the Big Ten.
And maybe in the country.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I think Maryland has a couple holes defensively that they're trying to patch up. But they're a good lacrosse team. They're very dangerous, very well coached. With Hopkins, what I liked is their quick start against Rutgers a week ago. Cole Williams right out of the box, took advantage of a shorty matchup. The Scarlet Knights decided to short him. He made him pay immediately. Joey Epstein continues to dazzle. Thought Ryan Darby was really good in the first half. Thought he struggled a little bit in the second half, the goaltender for Johns Hopkins. They continue to get really good faceoff work out of Kyle Prouty, which is going to be key against Justin Inacio of the Buckeyes. So, I mean, this is a really intriguing game on paper. And, yeah, like you mentioned, the consequences. You know, Hopkins, out-of-conference victories, North Carolina, Princeton.
Delaware.
What are they going to do for you on Selection Sunday? You know, this is where coaches will tell you everything you want to accomplish is right in front of you. Mm-hmm. And for both Ohio State and Hopkins this week, it's right in front of them.
That game will be Sunday at noon, again, on ESPNU. Dix, I want to just mention three of our don't-miss games. There's some other really important games. Number 9, Syracuse at number 19, North Carolina.
The Carolina-Syracuse rivalry resumed in 2014 with Syracuse entering the ACC. And during that stretch, Carolina's only beaten the Orange once. So this would be a good time for Carolina to pick up win number 2 against the Orange.
And one of the best rivalries in the sport, the 100th meeting, Army plays at Navy down in Annapolis Saturday at 3:30 p.m. Both of these teams are sort of just on the edge of the Patriot League.
Yeah.
Army's 4-2. Navy is 3-3. This is a big game for all of the right reasons.
Six teams make the Patriot League tournament, but I think everybody wants to be in a position to avoid Loyola until the championship game at all costs. And Army, tough loss a week ago to BU. A game that they were leading at home. Navy's been inconsistent this year. But when you have the star game, it is all bets are off. I know it's cliche, but it'll be rocking in Annapolis, and that'll be a lively crowd, and we'll see who comes out.
And then finally, a game that you're doing, number 3, Maryland, 9-2, 2-0 in the Big Ten, plays at Rutgers, who's 1-1 in the Big Ten and needs a win.
7 o'clock, prime time, Sunday night. And Rutgers has played Maryland incredibly close the last few years, and they just can't get over that hump. This would be the perfect time. This is a Scarlet Knight team that was dominant against Ohio State, showed up flat against Johns Hopkins. Will the real Rutgers stand up? Max Edelman, one of the best goalies in the country. Kieran Mullins having a terrific season. Then you look at the Maryland Terrapins, 16-12 winners over Michigan. Wolverines 10-man rode them the entire game. First and third quarters, Maryland couldn't figure it out. Second and fourth, it was like they've seen it a million times and even scored a goal, Matt Rahill. But the Terps have made some changes. Matt Rahill starting on close. They bumped Jack Welding up to long stick midfield. Wisnowskis and Bernhardt, 8 points apiece against Michigan. The second midfield unit for Maryland played more than the first midfield unit the first half against Michigan. So they're trying to develop some depth and some more personnel as the weather gets warmer. This should be a great game in Piscataway on Sunday night.
And you'll be on the call. That's Sunday night, 7 o'clock on BTN. All right, Dix, it's time for the give and go. This week, you went to your 25th college reunion, and we talked about that a little bit before. Now, while some things were definitely better back in the day, I'm talking about music, talking about not having to deal with social media, I'm talking about having PJ's Pub available for Hopkins undergrads.
Talking about having that. 2-for-1 at Charles Village Pub. Talking about Power Hour at Sticks.
Right.
On Thursday night where everything in the bar was a buck.
And a Fiji Islander where there was actually a pig and fun had at it.
Instead and room. Of
what I saw.
Yeah.
And a real band playing.
What about the Wawa Boxer Bash?
Does I don't think you're allowed to have that. That was a question I asked. We were talking about, I was with some Wawa fraternity brothers at the Fiji Islander, and we were saying, wow, this has really changed. And then I was like, hey, do you think they still have the Boxer Bash tonight? And we joked about how that's probably not happening.
So I guess maybe the flips, you know, like the silver lining is maybe it's okay that the Fiji Islander is still allowed to happen. It's just a much different version of what it used to be.
Yeah, if you would have been there, Dix, you probably would have wished that it wasn't happening. Just call it something else and just say what it is. You know, it wasn't like there was no island anything about it except for some guys in some Hawaiian shirts.
The garden party.
Yeah, that's more the garden party. It was more like it. Okay. Some tea sandwiches. All right, so here's the question today. Now, while a lot of things were better back then, we're still living in a different day and age. So, what are a few of the things that your 20-year-old mind back in the early 90s, it would have blown your mind to have some of the things that we have today? Like, what are those things that are the most incredible things that your 20-year-old mind wouldn't even have been able to comprehend?
The first one is a wife, someone to put up with me. So God bless my wife.
That's great.
Seriously.
A great answer.
Seriously.
A great answer. That's true.
Yeah. No That's offense.
Amazing. That's amazing.
No offense. I mean, you could probably fall in that category too.
Oh, yeah.
Sure. You know.
Of course.
Right off the top of my head, cell phone and the connectivity that people have always being wired up or looking. I mean, I'm guilty of it as anybody else. I'm always looking at my email, Twitter.
But is that a good thing?
Texting. No, it's not a good thing.
Yeah.
Not a good thing. So that would be the first thing I would say is technology. Cell phone. Yeah.
So I'm on the same page as you. I was thinking about this, like, what are some things while we were students in college in the early 90s that would just couldn't fathom? Mm-hmm. And the thing I kept coming back to was the smartphone.
Mm-hmm.
When we were in school, their phones were all hardwired.
Mm-hmm.
And if you had if you told someone you're like, I'll meet you somewhere, you had to be there or leave a note for them, write it down. There was no text messaging, no call on a cell phone as you're walking. Or, I'm 5 minutes late, I'm in traffic.
Yeah.
Or anything. You'd go to a payphone.
Payphone, and you would get get their answering machine.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah, answering machines. So just the idea of the smartphone and then all the things that you can do with it,
yeah.
Whether it's sending email, which I don't even think we had email back then. I don't think you could send
electronic. Yeah. I don't think AOL came on board and the internet didn't come on board until a few years after our graduation.
And then that's
like 97-ish, I want to say. 96, 97-ish.
Yeah, so the next thing, my second thing, is the internet and being able to Google any answer at any time. You want to know, what was that team's record back in 1974? Or what's the name of that actor that's in that show? You can just type it in and you get it instantaneously.
It's Ted McGinley. That's who you're thinking of.
Actually, I was thinking of...
Show killer. Jump the shark. Every show, you ever see Ted McGinley coming on your set... Know that your show is going to end within a year.
For all of you out there, let's put that Ted McGinley.
Yeah, go ahead. IMDb go ahead and use Google on him.
to who he is.
Yeah.
Yeah, so being able to just find anything out. And for the most part, it's correct. There was a time with the, you know, early days of the internet, maybe in the late 90s, where there was just some bad info out there. But Wikipedia is pretty solid.
Not bad.
As an example. And there's a lot of other apps, for instance, IMDb, that are amazing resources to figure out those kind of things.
I can remember when I was young, a kid growing up, I couldn't stay up for, like, you know, the 1979 World Series between the Orioles and the Pirates. The Baltimore Blast, indoor soccer was huge in Baltimore, and they were playing the San Diego Sockers on the West Coast, so I couldn't stay up.
They were called the Sockers?
The Sockers, S-O-C-K-E-R-S.
That is the most uncreative nickname.
Yeah. And the New York Arrows were another team. Steve Jungle was a big indoor soccer guy. But I would have to go to bed. My father would leave me a note the next morning saying, you know, here's the result of the game. Like I said, I didn't watch a second of the NCAA men's basketball championship this past Monday night. All I had to do was go on Twitter. Yeah, if it's not there, like, it's right. And my kids, like, hey, guys, guess who won the game last night? Oh, yeah, it was North Carolina. You know, or it was, you know,
Penn State.
Exactly. They're like, yeah, I already got it on Instagram or, you know, whatever.
So, yeah, one of my friends said he was watching, and you were doing the game, Dad.
Right.
And we were wondering where you were, kind of.
Yeah, we didn't even know you were out of the house.
And then the third thing, so I said the smartphone.
Yeah.
Just the internet and the information age of finding anything out. And then the third thing is streaming.
Mm-hmm.
Remember carrying around tapes, cassette tapes, and VHS. CDs, and VHS tapes,
yeah,
and DVDs later, but just the idea that, like, on my device, I have 8,000 songs,
Jesus.
And with what, you know, that I have in my database, but then also being able to tap into iTunes Music with a internet connection and stream stuff, any song I want ever, oh my God.
Yeah.
If you would have told me that, like, I remember going to, like, a record shops to get new music, or you'd have to wait for something to come on the radio.
I can remember listening
to Casey Countdown or
Casey Kasem Countdown, but it would be, remember B104, Kid Curry. So I'll never forget
the real Roxanne.
UTFO. Do you remember? Did I tell this story already?
No, I don't think so. But that's
Roxanne. And yeah. So it would be, like, you know, the top three requested songs would come on at 9 o'clock, and then you'd have to sit there with your cassette in your player. I was at a turntable, like, we played records, vinyl. And you would be like, all right, what's the number one song? And then you would hope that they would, like, the DJ would just shut up, because they always try to hit the post. And you know what the post is?
And, like, they would talk.
They talked the entire intro until they would start singing, but then you'd hit your record button, and then it would be, yo, can't go. I don't think and you'd have it. And you'd have, that's how you would have your, and mixtapes. How many mixtapes did you make back in the day?
Lots.
Yeah. Yeah. I got mixtapes.
Yeah. But to be able to stream music, it's awesome. It's the greatest thing.
To be able to stream lacrosse games.
Well, I mean, that goes to it. I always talk about this. Like, if you would have told me that I would be able to watch Hopkins Division III football games on a telephone.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
It would have blown my mind. Like, even watching the Jetsons or, like, the most sci-fi movie, they didn't have stuff like that,
right?
You know, that
right.
was crazy talk.
YouTube. I mean, I know we're on the technology tip, but YouTube, if
just being up to post up, upload any video, like, anything you want to see.
I love watching bad 80s movies, you know, like Meatballs or what else, Hamburger University, or so, just like those stupid raunchy teen comedies. And then you just, like, type it in.
Porky's Revenge.
Porky's was mainstream. Right? I mean, Miss Balbricker. Meatballs had, I think it was Bill Murray was in Meatballs.
Oh, yeah.
If I'm not mistaken. Yeah. But just you could just type in any movie, and then it played, you know, it's pretty cool. So, yeah, I think all the stuff you mentioned, just technology.
Yeah. Hey, I got to make a correction. Uh-huh. Last week on the show, you were talking about Meatloaf.
Mm-hmm.
And you said Will Ferrell's character in Old School yells, hey, Mom, Meatloaf.
Wedding Singers. Oh, no, Wedding Crashers.
Yeah,
it's my bad. My bad.
Yeah.
Did you catch that, or did a listener catch it?
I caught that. I was listening to it. And
have
I
no
said,
listeners.
I said, we're the number one podcast on Inside Lacrosse.
That is true. We should have talked about that at the top of the show.
Yeah. So thank you for all of you out there.
Yeah. We learned that we have, what is it, out of the last?
Four of the last five. Four of the five top episodes are ours over the last 30 days.
Look at that. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you for listening. That brings us to a nice conclusion here. If you like what you heard, please do us a favor and click on that subscribe button. Leave us a rating and share it with a friend so we can continue to be the number one podcast in Inside Lacrosse. You can hit us up on Twitter at Dixon Lacrosse and at dfly, that's D_FLY. Or you can send me an email at dflynn@insidelacrosse.com. Always, we appreciate you listening. And don't forget to check out our other podcasts. We drop a new one every weekday during the season. Have a great week and enjoy the games.